to you with a question, kind of in a dad moment. Coming to you like a young lad going to his father, because I am the recent owner of a mustache. I got a quarantine mustache.
And a nice mustache it is, too.
Well, it's a mustache, let's just say that. I've never owned a mustache. But a friend of mine on Twitter started talking about, like, beard wax and beard oils and stuff. And I don't know any of this stuff. So you, as a man who's had a Van Dyke, I think that's a Van Dyke, right?
That is a Van Dyke, because it doesn't connect between the mustache and the beard. If it connected, it would be a goatee. But with no connection there, it's a Van Dyke.
Yeah, you look like you're going to sell a Dutch East Indies company to someone. I've brought poppies to the Netherlands, and I'm going to sell them. With your Van Dyke, that thing doesn't connect, not because you shave it that way, but because nature don't make it that way, right?
Well, yeah. I you can tell I do shave it. And this is a good week and a half growth. You can tell there's just a couple whiskers there, giving it their best shot.
Yeah.
But it's so pathetic. It's easier just to sweep them away every couple weeks than to actually try and grow a full goatee. I tried for a couple of months to grow a beard last fall, and it was just like I gave up. I just don't have that.
I just realized that a Van Dyke is very much like what a character would have, like the banker on the Munsters. Like, if a banker came to the door and Herman Munster opens the door, he's like, "Yes, you're $40 late on the car payment." That's what a Van Dyke would be. A very specific choice.
The only real famous Van Dyke was Green Arrow. He had a Van Dyke, and he got his.
He did have a Van Dyke, didn't he?
Yeah,
and he had the dopey Van Dyke at the bottom.
Yeah, and it pointed in two different directions.
Yeah,
like
it was
a little turn signal.
It was like a weird Salvador Dali. Anyway, so let's get back to. I don't know anything, because the last time I had a beard, I was young and 20 and didn't care. But apparently, there's all this beard care bullshit, and I don't know anything about it. So I'm coming to you in my dad moment. What do I need to get? How do I wax my mustache? Do I oil it? Do I pamper it anyway?
You don't do any of that stuff. You wash your face, soap and water.
Slow down. Hold on. I got a piece of paper here. Take that again. Wash my face with soap and water.
Soap and water?
Wait a minute. Hold
soap
on. This is going
water.
Fast.
Yeah,
hold
you
on.
Gotta okay. rinse it out. Otherwise, you got a mess
you
on your hands.
You gotta rinse it out.
Oh, my God. We were in Bad Axe High School. The biology teacher was standing there talking about how when he brushes his teeth, he likes the minty flavor so much that he doesn't rinse afterwards because he just likes that feeling. And one of the students had to point out, well, yeah, but if you're not rinsing out, you're not clean. You got all that stuff just sitting there. And he's like, oh, yeah, I never thought about that. And then he got back to teaching biology. We had a real focus on the sciences in Bad Axe, is what I'm trying to say.
I was going to say, he also taught PE, I'm guessing.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, surprisingly enough, he was the gym teacher, yeah.
I know the high school of which you speak. We all had that teacher.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, why are you teaching science?
Listen, unless you're planning on doing something like if you got like one of these big, full lumberjack beards, then I can see using special product on it. Or if you want to do the Raleigh fingers, handlebar mustache where it's twirled up at the ends, you could get some mustache wax. But just like what you and I got, just a regular little brush underneath the nose there, when you're washing your face, give it a little scrub. I don't use any product on my mustache. Good Lord, no.
Well, then I'm asking the wrong guy. I was curious about what all these beard oils are, and the friend that I approached was like, oh yeah, makes your beard softer, and his wife was like, oh yeah, much softer. It's great. Not kissing him without beard oil is like kissing a muskrat, you know. So, because here's the thing, I was growing the mustache as a joke because who am I seeing in my life? So why not grow a mustache? And then my wife ended up liking the mustache. She's like, oh,
really?
Hello there. And I was like, really? A mustache? What? Because to me, I look like I'm pulling up outside of a Rush concert in my Firebird going, hey, how you doing? All right. 1974.
Yeah, you got early leave from your job at the meatpacking plant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I did my 40 hours this week. Listen, there's an ELO concert coming into town. I got to go to it. But my wife likes it. So I was like, well, what can I do? I assumed the one person in my life that had a good Van Dyke would know more about hair care than I did.
No,
and turns
you know
out
what?
You don't.
Maybe I'll have to ask my wife if my mustache is too bristly. I've never gotten any complaints.
Wouldn't it be funny, Brad, if like 25 years into the marriage, however long it is for you guys, if she's like, yes, it's like kissing a skunk. I wish you would use beard oil.
I've been waiting for you to say something. And she reaches next to the
full display.
She reaches underneath the bed and just pulls out all these products she's been hoarding for all this time. I've been waiting for you to say something. Yeah.
Immediately starts applying salves and lotions to your Van Dyke.
No, I got to be honest with you. I've never used that stuff. You know, so here's the thing. Your friend that gave you recommendations, are you going to start using this stuff?
Well, a part of it is a choice. Do I want to be the guy that has a mustache? I don't know that I do. I don't know that
question.
I do. Because it's a mustache is a big swing. You're not just saying like, hey, I've got a beard. Hey, I've got a goatee. You're saying like, you know what was a good year? 1972 was a good year. And, the AMC Gremlin was still in production. Green was a viable wallpaper choice in a lot of rooms. Like,
well, you're not wrong. But also, like you can tell me, a lot of my gray is coming out on my face. You know, like I've got the Reed Richards temples, which I prayed for as a teenager. But oh my God, I was so hoping
you
I was going to get.
You were praying for all the wrong things, Brad. Oh, please let me look like Reed Richards. Oh, that's the ideal of a man is Reed Richards. Ugh.
Oh, and I wish I was making that up. I really want, one day, please. You know, forget about superpowers, proportionate strength of a spider.
I just
wanted
the temples. Oh,
yeah.
God,
but if you do end up experimenting with this, you'll have to let me know because maybe I want to use it. But it is a real commitment because like a lot of your gray is going to come out through there.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. I know there already are. Let me ask you this as a friend, and you. I say this as a friend. You cannot hurt my feelings in your answer to this, right?
Oh, good.
Do you like the mustache?
I don't dislike the mustache. It for me, it's a bit of a push. I kind of prefer the clean cut Dave Kellett a little bit more.
Okay,
but it's not like this is an atrocity either. This is still a very good version of Dave Kellett.
Do I look like I'm going to try to sell you a hi-fi?
Maybe. There might be a hi-fi in the offing at this point. There might. Let's put it this way. Let's put it this way. If the camera that we're looking at each other on doing this podcast, if the camera panned back and you had shag carpeting and a lava lamp, my eyebrows wouldn't go up.
Well, on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about mustache maintenance and care.
And making a groovy living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave! Let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We have a lot of questions that have come in from Patreon backers over at patreon.com/comiclab because of all the great folks that jumped in on the special offer. And we welcome you to the Patreon family and the 60 hours of exclusive podcasts that you'll get with the show. So thank you all for coming in. We got a lot of questions to tackle. But first, I wanted to thank also the Comic Lab sponsor for this week, Wacom, over at WACOM.com, the makers of the new Wacom One. Brad has one. I can see it in the background of his camera in the studio there.
That's right.
He's got it laid out, as do I, using it on a near daily basis in the studio and around the house, frankly, as quarantine stretches on. Dave Kellett drawing in the bathtub, drawing in the shower, drawing on the couch, drawing underneath the couch, growing a mustache, making weird choices. Quarantine, it's having an effect on me.
No, it is really nice. It's super lightweight, portable, and like I keep telling people, I don't know how many times I have suggested to people with like kids that are just starting to become interested in digital art. and they're like, I want to buy something, but I don't, I need something that is at such a price point that if this thing doesn't take, and you know, if you've got kids, you know, sometimes one week they're interested in ice skating, the next week they're interested in digital art, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to put a whole lot of money into it. The price point on that Wacom One is such that it's really not going to be a big, big deal if they stick with it and then maybe walk away from it for a while and come back to it in a few years. You know,
absolutely.
It's not going to be a big deal. This thing is a perfect price point.
That's right. So we thank Wacom and the Wacom One over at WACOM.com. And Bradley J. Geiger, let's jump into the first question this week.
Yeah.
All right, Brad, our first question comes in from Carrie Copa, and Carrie writes, I have started working on a graphic novel project, and my question is, how do you build a group of creative peers, not beers, creative peers? I'll tell you how to build a group of creative beers.
I'd rather talk about your question, Dave.
How do you build a group of creative peers to bounce ideas off of? I know my story could be better with input from people along the way, but I have a very small social circle, and I'm not sure how to find more story and comic-minded people. An online network would be ideal, but often the internet feels like too many opinions with too little insight. Boy, amen to that. How do you find your people? Brad, this is a great question from Carrie, and then we'll do the follow-up question about how finding a group of beers. But finding a group of peers that you can bounce ideas off of, run things up the flagpole and see if they stick. I never understood that phrase, but yeah. How do you
do it, Brad? Well, that's because you're mixing metaphor. It's not running up the flagpole and see what sticks. You throw it against the wall to see what sticks. You run it up the flagpole to see who salutes.
Oh, I'm a dummy. So we're learning in the course of this podcast, everybody, we're learning that Dave Kellett and English idioms do not work well together.
No, they really don't.
I've gotten so much sass for loaded for bear, for example, a phrase that did not know existed in English, and
they
apparently
came after
everyone
you for
else
loaded
did.
For bear.
There's another one that we did that I didn't know, and boy, did I get hassled for that one. But anyway, all right, run it up the flagpole and see who salutes, Brad.
Yes.
So how do you find your peers? Because you and I'm now 20 years into my comic making. You're 20 years into your comic making. And we, for the first time ever, have been bouncing ideas off each other. Literally, I've known you for decades. I could have done this years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
We started calling each other up and running ideas past each other. And virtually every time, to the 99% of the time, we get to a better place than when we started. Or if we don't, the 1% that we don't, we're like at least assured that the idea that we came in with, like, nope, you've got a winner. That's great. Go with it. That kind of a thing, right?
Yeah. So I've been thinking about that too, because it was like any other thing. Like it started out with just a small little thing, and then another thing, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, I've got a whole joke that we need to work our way through, and then all of a sudden it kind of took root. And like any good relationship, and any genuine relationship, I don't think that you can manufacture it. In other words, I don't know that I can give you steps to follow in a bullet list to how to build a writer's room. I can tell you who to look for. I can tell you some thoughts on, you know, some directions you might go, and some ways that you might kind of try to see if there's something there.
Right.
But I don't know that I can give solid advice. What you want to find is somebody whose work you respect.
Yeah.
Right. Because if you don't respect that person, and if they don't respect you, if it's not a mutual respect, then you're never going to get anywhere. Right? Because the person that doesn't respect the other is never going to take that opinion as strongly as they should. And that's really important. When Dave comes to me and says, I've got this idea, I think it's pretty good, and I'm like, yes, anding him, because it is good, but I my spidey sense tells me it could be better.
Right.
If he didn't respect me at least a little bit, he would just hang up the phone and walk away. He's like, nah, I'm going to do this thing. What does Geiger know?
And not to make it a quid pro quo thing, but if Brad always called me for ideas, and each call was 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes long, and I never called Brad back, it would start to engender a feeling of being taken advantage of, or I don't want to do this, or I don't want to help.
Right.
Right, exactly. So there's got to be a level of friendship, of mutuality, I guess is what I'm saying. That, like, we're codependent. We're not codependent. We're helping each other out.
Well, maybe a little bit codependent.
Co-supportive, I guess, is a better way of saying it. Is that we're it's a mutual aid society. And so I think one of the problems, Carrie, you might find is if you are creating the comic and you've got a couple of friends in your life that are helping you because they love the comic, just make sure that you are, in a true friendship way, helping them out in something in their life that, and make it clear that I want to thank you for the writing that you've been assisting me on so joyfully and helpfully and enthusiastically. So let me help you build that IKEA desk, or let me help you do, you know what I mean? Like, if they're going to be unpaid and it's they're doing it out of a joy or a love for you or a love for the project, make sure that you are giving back, basically. Because, Brad, you jump in. You had a thought there.
Well, so one thing I'm thinking of is let's say we were to try to give Carrie some thoughts about where to go. Well, my first thing would be, first of all, the go-to is going to be social media, right? Because that's where you're going to be doing a lot, your most discussion. And what we see over and over again is the key to making social media work is being social. That means talking and responding. And as you're going forward and doing this just in the course of building your own social media profile, you might be focusing on a couple people where you say, okay, this person really seems to be a writer or an artist that I really respect. I'm going to keep talking to this person a little bit more
than I would have normally,
just to do the three C's or the four C's.
The thing to be careful of here is that if you are in any way putting out an energy of soliciting ideas or jokes, 99% of the time, it will be terrible jokes. It'll be terrible storylines, terrible ideas.
Yeah.
There has been, and I don't know if you have this in your life, Brad, there are two people in my life on Twitter that every time they come at me with an alt joke pitch or a storyline, I'm like, God, that's actually really good. And one of them is a retired legal librarian. Mm. She is, I'm guessing, in her 50s and is brilliant. Like, her humor writing, I'm like, I would take you on a writing staff. You are amazing. And another is a young person. I have no idea where they are in the world. I can tell they're young by their references, but also funny. The other problem, though, is that if you in any way solicit that, you get a ton of people that think they're hilarious, that think they're creative, that think they have the good ideas.
Yeah.
And it's just the worst ideas. So when Brad says, be social, reach out, be careful, because if you start to solicit for writers or pitches, you're going to get just a tsunami of bad ideas.
Right.
In the same way that if you opened up trials for the Houston Astros, you'd get, you're like, open tryouts. You'd get all the wannabes that think they can play baseball. They can't play baseball. And then you might find one diamond in the rough. So be careful.
Let me go back and reformat that just a bit.
Okay.
Yep. I'm not talking about putting out like an open call, but let's say somebody, we'll call him Fred. Let's say Fred posts something and I start to see Fred's work and I say, that's that Fred, this person has a lot on the ball.
Yeah.
When he posts, I'm going to respond to it and I'm going to start a little conversation. And then next week, I'm going to have a little conversation. And pretty soon, if Fred is reciprocating, now he's starting conversations with me. I'm starting conversations with him. Now maybe we have a little sidebar, right? Now we're starting to build an acquaintanceship that could build into a friendship. Now, maybe every now and again, we feel comfortable to, you know, talk in DMs or whatever. And we've got, you know what I mean? What I'm talking about is finding people and slowly building up a friendship. But, you know, again, this is number one, Fred may not be interested in me, right? Fred may be like, I've got my own thing going on.
Of Brad's high school career? All right, go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, I could never get Fred's attention. But you know, what we're talking about is something that, again, is going to take a long time to build for the sheer fact that here you got Dave and I, two people who like each other an awful lot. We've been friends friends for a long time. We've been acquaintances for a long time. I know of Dave.
We're familiar.
No, but again, this is just something that we've started doing recently. So I don't. That's my first answer. Now, before we move on to our second topic, I'll give you a second answer.
Okay.
And it's self-serving, but there are other versions of this, of course, and you can pursue them. You don't have to become a Patreon backer of Comic Lab, but it helps because when you do, you get access to the Patreon Discord server. And we've got a room there called hashtag Writer's Room, and that's exactly what happens in Writer's Room. Is somebody comes in and says, I've got this idea. Here it is. Bang. And you can get an awful lot of different viewpoints, some of them better than others, about what you can do. And there's been a lot of workshopping of ideas. There's been a lot of, there's been some very, very good things that have come of that. And that's in a private setting where you don't have to worry about, basically everybody on the Comic Lab Discord are pretty serious cartoonists. Let's face it, before you become a Patreon backer, in most cases, you're kind of serious about what you're doing.
Right.
I would suggest, since this person already is a Patreon backer, jump over to the Discord server, jump into Writer's Room, and see what you get out of it. It might be a good stopgap until you can build those friendships that you feel comfortable with doing the next step.
And more than a stopgap, I could see a world where it becomes a stepping stone towards some of those online acquaintances becoming friendships, becoming writer pals, you know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing that Brad was said in a different way, but I would like to say it in terms of trust. So Brad was saying it in terms of, interest. Oh, like Fred and I are sparking interest in each other. Oh, now our acquaintanceship is becoming friendship. Oh, now we're writing together. But part of it is the baby steps, and this may sound basic, but the baby steps of trust. Like, Brad pitches me an idea. I don't laugh at Brad.
Yeah.
I don't make fun of Brad or go, what a dumb idea. It's the baby steps of, like, yes anding or I like that idea. What if we did this? And Brad, and as Brad trusts me that it's a safe spot to throw out bad ideas along with good ideas to get to the great idea, you know, then you build on it. And that's not easy to do. I will say, like, as to Brad was saying, we've known each other for 20 years and it was still... It's still a growing process between us in these weeks where we've started to write with each other, you know?
Yeah.
The length of idea pitching and the types of ideas that we've pitched to each other, we might not have done in those first sessions.
Right.
Like, the first session is like, hey, help me find a better word for this punchline. Like,
right.
I need to go out on a better blow than what I have. Can you help me find a better punch word, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Brad will go, yep, instead of saying Salisbury, make sure you say steak sauce or whatever it is, you know? And I'm like, that's better. Thanks, Brad. Talk to you later. Okay, bye. And then Brad calls me up a week later and goes, hey, I need a different punch word for that. Anyway, what I'm saying is the trust, the slow building is like putting down bricks in a friendship to build a wall. You know, it's like, it's not all at once. It's tentative. There might be starts and stops, and there might be things where you're like, this person's not right for writing, and that's okay. But I'd also say, look for the people in your life that... you can tell the people that add a net plus and that are
yes.
And you can also tell the people that are poison in your life.
Yeah.
If I come away from a conversation like I'm having right now with Brad and I feel energized, I feel excited to create, I feel happier, right? Which I do, and I'm saying this in friendship, which I do every week that we record Comic Lab. I come out of this feeling better, feeling more optimistic, feeling happier with ideas that I want to bounce off of you in the future, with ideas that I want to go execute on. That person is a net plus in my life. Brad is a net plus in my life. But if I come away from a conversation with Brad feeling like, I hope I said the right thing, or that was weird when he said that, or I don't feel so good about myself, or I don't really want to create right now. That person is a poison in my life. And part of reaching through to adulthood is removing the people that are a poison in your life and finding the people that are a net plus in your life. And so I wish you well, Carrie, as I'm sure Brad does, in finding the people that bring you up, bring you energy, and bring you more creativity.
And just to put a capper on it, I just want to pat you on the back, Carrie, because there's one thing you said, and I want to go out on this. But there's one thing Carrie said that made me instantly like Carrie. I know my story could be better with input from people along the way. That self-realization, 90% of the people who are doing work that isn't measuring up to what it could be are the people that just are sure that they're doing gold. It's when you realize that you could be better, when you have that self-realization that you're doing well, but you could be better. And that one way to do that is to accept some other people's thoughts. That's the first step on the road to greatness. And there's a lot of people that never get to that step. Believe me, I spent an awful long time assuming I was doing gold. It wasn't until much, much later I had the self-realization that, I need to really put some work and thought into this. So congratulations on self-actualization, self-realization. You're gonna get there. I absolutely know it.
Yeah, it's not as strong as what Socrates said, that I know that I know nothing, but the awareness that you are aware that you're not as good as you want to be is like Socrates, a step towards bettering yourself, towards actualizing a better you, making better decisions with better information. And so I guess what Brad's saying is the humility to say I can get better is a great part of the process of being a creative person, no matter who you are, what stage you're at. So I will echo Brad in saying that's a good attitude to bring into this, Carrie. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. All right, well, just a reminder that the sponsor for today's show is evil-comics.com from Brad Geiger. just a reminder. I don't know why I said that. No,
but I did probably want to sponsor the show.
I did want to lead into the next question, Brad. This comes in from Mark Ashworth at patreon.com/comiclab. And Mark writes, has this happened to you? You finally get to draw or write. You sit down. Then you discover that your eyes have been closed for 5 or 10 minutes because you rested your eyes, which really means you went to sleep sitting up. Mm-hmm. Any tips or advice on getting more waking moments focused on creating and creating with fewer, quote, eye resting moments? Yes. So, Brad, I'll ask this of you as a very old man. So you often fall asleep doing basic tasks, tying your shoes, sitting in your comfortable chair, caressing your old hunting dog, Mr. Carruthers. How do you solve this as a 75-year-old? How have you solved this?
Oh, thanks. I'll have you know I'm not a day over 58. Listen, I've actually got two answers for this. The first one is very straightforward. If you've gotten to the point that you're falling asleep sitting up, go to bed.
Yes.
It's time to take a break. Go to bed. You know what? Go to bed. Maybe set your alarm clock 20 minutes early tomorrow morning and get a good night's sleep and rest. And especially if you're writing, take a little rest. And somebody just tweeted me this on Twitter just this week, said, oh, remember how I always used to talk about using your subconscious to help you write? And to put it into your brain just as you're falling asleep, just to say it over and over again, I'm going to write the next chapter of Evil Inc., or I'm going to write this, and just repeat it as you fall asleep. This person did it and said, it's amazing. He goes, I woke up with 10 ideas.
All for Evil Inc.
All for Evil Inc., yeah, because I tell people.
Fall asleep saying, I'm going to write a great storyline for Evil Inc. I've got nothing for Driver Sheldon, but I've got some amazing Evil Inc. storylines.
Yeah. And listen, it doesn't always happen that way. It's not like a turnkey type of deal, but I'm telling you, I do believe in the subconscious. So go to bed. Go to bed. Wake up a little bit early in the morning and get after it fresh, and you'll have so much better results. What do you think, Dave?
I think that is option A, and it is the strongest option, right? Like if you are falling asleep when you sit down or when you go to be creative, here's what is actually happening. You've been working, doing all day long, and you're like, now it's me time. I'm going to sit to create. And you sit down and you're physically exhausted, right? Uh-huh. So like Brad said, go to bed, and then wake up early. That's another option, is wake up an hour earlier, brew a cup of coffee, and then get to work, right? That's option A. Option B, and I've had this happen in my life too, is that I'm not moving enough. If I am too stationary and sitting for too much during the day, my body is like it's like mega tired all the time. Like, so I have found that the opposite is true. Jump on the treadmill for 20 minutes, go for a quick jog, and then jump in the shower, and you'll kind of have a second wind at the day. You know what I mean? There's the flip side, basically. You can either need to get sleep, which is very possible, or you kind of need to move more. That's also possible, right? And so coffee is always an option. Lord knows I'm married a Cuban, so coffee is always an option. But
then you've got
say,
the caffeine crash after that, don't you?
It
works for a little while, but then you're right down again.
Yeah, and you don't drink coffee, do you, Brad?
I have one cup. It's the size of a bucket, but it's just, but it's just one cup. No, I have one cup of coffee, and I make a very frou-frou cup of coffee. I discover I really like percolator coffee. I think it's a much better taste. So we got a percolator. I make a one cup. I foam the milk, and I put a little swirl of caramel in it. It's a very precious little cup of coffee, but it's mine. And then I don't drink coffee or really any caffeinated beverage to speak of for the rest of the day.
Well, you know what? To be fair to your body, if you are able to limit it to one cup, and God bless, I don't remember when those days were for me. If you can limit it to one cup, that's probably all you need to get yourself moving, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, I'm like a heroin junkie at this point. It's like if I need 17 cups of coffee to get the eyes open. Anyway, to get back to your question, it's either or. I think the most likely one is you need sleep. You need to go to bed. Because if you are falling asleep when you sit down to create, it means you are physically exhausted, right? That's the most likely one. The other one, less likely, but also a possibility, is you need to move more. So go for a quick jog. Frankly, even a walk, a quarter mile walk is a perfect length to get the heart moving, get the circulation going. It's not too tiring. It's kind of pleasant. And then you're back in and jump in the shower and you're ready to go, right? Like your body's moving, your blood's flowing, all that sort of stuff, right? I'm seeing Brad waving like a circus performer to get me to stop talking. Go ahead.
There's a little in between too, because I will say Daddy does like his afternoon 15-minute nap.
Oh my God, Daddy sounds really creepy when Daddy refers to himself in the third person.
Well, I didn't want to say Grandpa like you always say, because that makes me sound way older.
So let me ask you this, because I have never been someone who's able to take a nap. If you put Dave Kellett to sleep in the afternoon, Dave Kellett wakes up throwing punches. I genuinely, oh my God, I have to tell you this, Brad. So I went to college at Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame, right, in Indiana. And my freshman year,
as opposed to the University of Notre Dame in Jersey.
Touche. Well, I have to say that because when I accepted going there, did I ever tell you this story? I thought it was on the East Coast.
Yes.
My dad booked the flight. He's like, all right, we're going to Indiana next week. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And he's like, yeah, we're going to Indiana. I was like, wait, no, I don't want to go to Indiana. No. Like, it's the opposite of what I want. So totally book smart, world stupid. Anyway, so I go to Notre Dame, and they, as a lot of colleges do, they automatically assigned me roommates. Mm-hmm. And my roommate was the free safety for the Notre Dame football team, a very good football team. And he set, Brad, the freshman year record for weightlifting at Notre Dame, which is like an 80-year weightlifting record. He set it, right, as a freshman. Yeah. This one afternoon, Dave Kellett fell asleep for a nap. I'm going to speak in the third person now. Dave Kellett fell asleep for a nap, and he very kindly woke me up for a chemistry test that he knew I was missing. He shook me gently, and he goes, Dave, you're late for a test. And Brad, because I'm not good with naps, I sawed off and clocked him in the jaw.
No.
And he's so strong, Brad, so strong. Like, he could crush me if he wanted to. Yeah. I hit him in the jaw, full strength. I hit him in the jaw. And he grabs my head with one hand and goes, I know you didn't mean to do that. And that's all we ever said of the matter. He didn't hurt me. He just grabbed my head the way you would grab the back of a dog's scruff to say, stop barking. He just grabbed my full face and head and went, I know you didn't mean to do that. You have a chemistry test. Go to your test. So that's why I'm no good with naps is my sideways point there. Is that
what a sweet human being.
Oh, he was so gentle and kind and funny.
Oh my God.
Anyway, so I'm not good with naps. How do you do it? How do you take a nap? Because I go to bed, I wake up angry in the afternoon. Angry.
It is difficult because you really have to, you have to get the room quiet and you've got to really focus on shutting your brain down. And when you've only got a couple synapses firing like I do, it's a little easier than for most. But you do have to get down and it's like, I'm going to take a nap. And you have to set an alarm for like 15 or 20 minutes. And you've got to stick to that because after, say, 20 minutes or so, you do get into that really deep REM sleep. Come out of it.
Whereas
if you can just sit down and it takes a lot of willpower. And sometimes, some days for me are better than others. But it takes a lot of willpower to, when that alarm comes off, it's like you've got to swing your feet over on the other side of the bed, put them on the ground and get yourself out of the bed before your brain can, you know, when you're half asleep, your brain can talk you into anything.
Sure.
You know, 5 more minutes ain't going to hurt.
What's another hour in the grand scheme of things?
Doesn't matter. Exactly.
Suddenly, did you notice, by the way, that suddenly I became, what's another hour in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, you were doing your Floyd the Barber, it sounded like. Andy.
Well, I don't know.
But you got to be a little bit cautious. But then again, on the other hand, some days, like I said, are better than others. And sometimes I fall right asleep and an hour is gone. But on those days, I've got to wake up and tell myself, you must have needed that hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You must have needed it, Brad. You need a widow sweep for your widow head so that your widow body could weigh down and make comics way to win today.
Yeah. You do have to listen to your body.
And joking aside, me making fun of Brad, it's actually true. Brad needs to listen to his body. I need to listen to my body. We have both, frankly, in our younger days, abused our body for the purposes of keeping working, keep going. We're going to become cartoonists. Oh, God, I'm going to hurt my body. I hurt my shoulder. Lord knows Brad hurt his brain. I'm just kidding. The thing that I tried, Brad, once, because keeping it in an art vein, you know, Leonardo da Vinci was a big advocate of the key nap. Did you ever hear about Leonardo da Vinci's nap?
No.
He would sleep in his studio, which had marble floors, in an upright wooden chair, and he would hold a gigantic iron key, right? Gigantic iron key, like the kind of like you would have for a church front door, you know, that kind of massive key. And he would fall asleep with it in his hand on at his side. And when he had reached a point where his muscles relaxed and let go of the key and it fell to the marble floor, it would wake him back up. He's moving. It's been 15 minutes and he's back at work, right? He's back painting or back creating something like a submarine, whatever he was doing.
Yeah.
I tried that once. I was like, oh, you know what? If it worked for Leonardo da Vinci, it can work for me.
Yeah.
So
I
didn't use a key. I just used a big heavy stapler, right? And I held it in my hand and I sat in a chair, closed my eyes. Sure enough, I fell asleep. I let go of the stapler. It had the massive clanging, bang, 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 bang. Scared me so much, brother. Like, I was the opposite of refreshed and relaxed at the end of this. I was like, damn you, Leonardo da Vinci, that does not work at all.
Yeah, that day Sheldon was drawn with all kinds of jaggy lines that looked like Charles Schultz drew it that day.
Had to change the shorts. It was that kind of a wake up, you know? that was more graphic than I needed. But anyway, to the point, back to the question asker. You do have to listen to your body. If your body is falling asleep. Now, there is the subset question here is it possible that creativity is giving his brain the permission to relax? Like he's wound up. And the idea that he's like, now it's my time. Now I get to create, right? That might be something that you need to work on in such that like maybe you need to be getting a better night's sleep. Maybe you need to give yourself permission to go to sleep without looking at your phone at 9 or 10 o'clock at night rather than 1 o'clock in the morning. But it may be that you need to play a mental game with yourself that like creativity is not sleeping time. And so you do whatever tricks you need to do, a shower beforehand, a shot of espresso right before you're about to create, 15 minutes before you're about to create. And whatever it takes to power through. What do you think, Brad?
Remember when I said I had two answers? You just led me into my second answer.
Oh, shoot. Did I steal your answer? I'm sorry.
No. But it's the perfect lead-in because sometimes when I'm writing, I want to get to that brain space where I'm kind of half asleep and half awake. I sometimes will actually choose that time to start writing because I get into this weird kind of, I'm not asleep and I'm not awake and I'm kind of dreaming and I'm kind of writing. Mm. And sometimes, again, going back to that whole power of the subconscious mind thing, sometimes I actually have a little bit of a breakthrough at that point or something falls right into place. When I'm writing, I kind of like having that in between sleep space to write.
Right. Right. It gives you half conscious, half subconscious, half creative, half editorial space.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, though, you just did something that I've never seen you do physically before while we're podcasting.
What's
so
that?
I have to share this with people because I don't even know that you did this. You were talking about your subconscious and your elbows came up to about eye level and you, with a single middle finger on each eyebrow, you rubbed your eyebrows out. And it looked like something that like a villain would do after they've tied someone down to the railroad tracks. You're like, yes, and so the subconscious, and you're rubbing your eyebrows. And I've never seen you do that before. What was that weird motion? Have you ever caught yourself doing that before?
I can tell you what's happening. As you'll probably hear next show, I'll tell you when we open the next show, everything that happened today. But I've been working all day today and I'm still sweating, like sweating profusely. So I've got sweat coming down my forehead and it just felt good to get it out of my eyebrows. So that was just me wiping sweat away.
You look like, so you know how like if you've ever been to a Sephora and they're doing the makeup applique like right there for someone, you look like you were doing your own Sephora makeup applique in the middle of the podcast. And so yeah, my subconscious, and you're just doing some blush,
just stroking a little, my eyebrows just from a inward little something, to outward.
All right, Brad, I'm going to jump us into our next question. And
yes,
this is a particularly fun one. So, all right, MK writes over at patreon.com/comiclab. Brad and Dave, which part of the process of making comics is the most challenging for you? And how do you overcome those challenges? So, Brad, I turn that question to you, my friend. Which part of making comics is most challenging for you?
For me, without a doubt, it's the writing. And not incidentally, it's because the writing is the most important part, right?
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before. In almost all cases, it's always the writing that's most important. Great writing can save bad art, but there's not art out there that's spectacular enough to save a poorly written piece.
Right.
And so I really think writing is the most important. I think it's not a surprise that that's also the part that gives me the most trouble. It's the part that in fact, for the last really couple of weeks, I've been really slowed down writing because there's a couple of parts in the Evelynn storyline I'm writing right now that's very kind of pivotal, and I have to make sure they hit the right notes. And I've actually scrapped a lot of things that I've written because they just weren't right, and I didn't know what was gonna come out that would be better, if anything. Yeah. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does.
So the writing is the most important part. And how do you overcome it? By not giving up, by not giving in, by not settling, for something that, well, this is good enough for now. You know, you remember watching TV shows, and ours was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Every now and again, there was an episode that I would look at my wife and say, well, that was a bridge episode. That wasn't a very good episode. And looking back, it was like, no, you know what? That wasn't a bridge episode. It was just an episode that wasn't written as well as the other ones were, right? And we were giving it a pass because we were fans. We called it a bridge episode. But how do you overcome that by not allowing yourself any bridge episodes and by always saying, nope, I'm going to stick with this and I'm not going to put it out until it's ready. As a result, let's see, I think last week or the week before, I didn't update any Evil Inc. Going back a couple of weeks, I instead of updating twice a week, I updated once that week and once the next week.
Right.
It's not the best situation, but again, I've said since we started the show 2 years ago, we're not beholden to the everyday update anymore, and we're in a place right now in terms of web publishing that you can do that. In fact, I advocate you should do that.
Yeah.
So take the time you need, and there's only one way to get past that, and that is to keep going and not let, and most importantly, not left your, leave you off the hook. So Dave, what is the most challenging part of cartooning for you?
Yeah, I also think that the most challenging part for me is reading Brad's writing. So I agree with you on that. I don't know. That was the best joke I had. I had nothing. So
but it was good. It was good.
I had nothing. So no, I will. I like my friend Brad. I think that good writing can absolutely save bad art. Bad art cannot save good bad writing. Good art. God bless America. Good art cannot save bad writing. And the reason I know that
you're kind of a bridge co-host right now. You know,
I'm really phoning it in terms of the language of that we're speaking here. The reason I know that is I have dear friends who have drawn beautiful books, stunningly beautiful books. But the story goes nowhere, and the writing goes nowhere, and the jokes don't land. And I'm like, duh. Maybe pair up with a writer. This is not your wheelhouse. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, I know cartoonists who have built stunning careers because of stellar writing, and they could not draw their way out of a box. It is kid level drawing. And I think early part of my career was that. I've gotten a little better with my drawing, but I'm still not great. As the fan in Emerald City Comic Con said, Dave Killen, my wife and I were just talking about you with your great writing and so art. And the reason I can laugh about that is that I'm not classically trained. I'm not art school trained. I've gotten better as I've gotten older, and I will get better still. But it's not my wheelhouse. But the reason why I think my career has worked is I know my way around a joke. I know my way around the playground that is the English language, you know?
Yeah.
And that can save my bad art. It can lift up my bad art. But that being said, like Brad, I know that when that falters, when that fails, that's when it's a challenge. When I'm sitting at my desk and there's no one around, and there's a full cup of coffee and I've got full energy and I sit down and the gas tank, for whatever reason creatively, is just empty.
Yeah.
Or I don't know the path forward for five different storyline arcs that could go in totally different directions, right? Because the choices that I make will ripple out for years in Drive, for example, right?
Yeah.
Or I've got five different punchlines and I can't editorially choose. I can't nail it down to one.
Right.
And so those are the moments where I go, duh, I'm not enjoying myself. This is not fun. This is the most work-like moment that I have, right?
Yeah.
Because even when I'm stumbling through a bad drawing of a horse or a bicycle in Sheldon or Drive, it's still at the end of the day, I'm drawing. I'm not digging a ditch. It's fun,
right.
You know? So anyway, as far as how do I overcome that challenge, like Brad, what did you say? Never give up, never give in. You were either doing Galaxy Quest or Winston Churchill, kind of, I think. I'm not sure what you were doing.
Don't let yourself off the hook. Don't let yourself go. Keep going. Keep trying.
Yeah. And I actually think that you made one of the more valid points that younger us would not have understood, which is don't force it out. Don't force it out into the world with a mediocre product.
Yes.
Get it right and then serve it up in the best form you can. Go ahead, Brad.
There was a time, this was way back. This was in the early 200s or 2000s. We don't stop stroking your eyebrows. This was in the early aughts. And this was still when advertising model meant that most web cartoonists were doing it every day. Penny Arcade was not. Penny Arcade did 3 days a week.
Right.
And I don't know whether I was talking to one of them personally or whether we were on a panel together. I forget exactly what the impetus was for this conversation. But they and I were kind of taking two different positions. And I was like, well, it's really important to update every day and to build that relationship with your readers and all that other stuff that was important then in terms of the ad model. And I think it was Jerry who said, we realized a long time ago that we had a choice between serving our readers steak 3 times a week or giving them hamburgers every day. And we went with the former. And it's never let us down.
Yeah.
And it really took me aback at that point. It really, really...
You love steak. You're known for...
Well, listen, I like them both. you know, the best side dish for a steak is a hamburger. But it really took me aback. And again, speaking of like, if we could talk to our younger selves, it really, really kind of got me into a point where I was like, I don't know that I really appreciate what these guys are saying. Later on, of course, the web publishing landscape changed,
right.
And so obviously I agree with them now.
Right.
But But to be honest with you, they were kind of right back then too. You know?
Yeah, they also had the audience to support it. And they also had the website designed to support it, because no matter what they did, they got double the page views that I got because of that unique model of blog on one page, comic on another. But anyway, all that aside. I think the writing is the challenge. But frankly, I think any time there is a creative challenge, I think the underscore that Brad and I might give you is that even if the output is not coming, in terms of you're not putting out anything today, don't give up.
Yep.
You've got to you take a few take a break, go for a walk, go for a run, have a nice meal, you know, take in some entertainment, but then back at it later that night. Try it again. You know, didn't work again that night. All right, the next day, do what you got to do. Back at it at the writing desk or at the drawing desk, that kind of thing. And then also recognize that if the joy, I have said this before, but if the joy is there, the art starts to flow. And so if you're forcing it in the sense that, oh God, I'm going to create, I'm going to have fun. Yeah. Oh, Brad, why aren't we having fun? Then it becomes like the dad forcing the family on, have a fun vacation. Oh, you know, why aren't you kids laughing?
Yes. We're going to have fun or else.
So whatever it takes for you to recapture the joy of it, I often find that my joy levels are 1,000% leaking into the quality of my writing and the quality of my drawing.
Yes.
And so try to rediscover what the joy of the process is for you. Don't you think, Brad?
No, I agree 100%. And really that, so we both said writing, but you could apply that advice to any number of other things that might be vexing you. You know, we would probably give the same advice if you were talking about, you were having trouble penciling or inking or lettering or anything else. We would give you the same advice, is to stick with it. Don't let yourself off the hook, and realize that you're going to be doing this for a long time. And if you don't get it done right now, that's okay too.
Yeah. And then if it becomes a long-term pattern, if you're like a month in, 2 months in, 3 months in, and you're really still noticing it's like molasses, the whole process. Yeah. Well, at that point, then maybe I think in friendship, both Brad and I would say maybe it's worth an evaluation. Like what has changed in my life? What has changed for my view of this project? Mm-hmm. What about the project has changed? What about my situation around the project has changed? Is it money? Is it stress? Is it my relationships in my life? Is it the reaction or lack of a reaction that the project is getting, right? If I guess what I'm saying is, if a continuous part of the process is always challenging, a self-evaluation is worthwhile after a bit of time, I think, you know?
That actually leads into a question that I've got on the list for us to handle in the next couple of shows. And it's such a nice transition, I can't resist. You mind if I read this one to you?
Yeah, go for it.
This one comes in from our $5 Patreon backer, Rob Chambers, who says, I'm closing down my webcomic after 10 years. And he's asking me, but I think we can both kind of tackle this. He says, Brad, what did you learn from shutting down Greystone Inn that could apply going forward? In other words, I got to the same place after 4.5 years of doing Greystone, which was really honestly going nowhere. I decided to stop, reevaluate what I was doing. And that's when I created Evil Inc., which applied all of the mistakes that I made in Greystone Inn were fixed and realized, and all the wisdom, if you can call it that, applied to creating that new comic. And that's actually my advice to Rob. So what did I learn from shutting down Greystone Inn? Number one, that I should have done it way earlier. I spent 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And really, I think after two, maybe certainly after three, I knew that this was not going anywhere. And I knew that there were some serious problems.
Oh, did you know it? You knew it in your heart?
Yeah, I was, but again, I was so doggedly focused on getting the next one out and getting the next one out and getting the next one out.
Right. Right.
And again, there were a lot of bridge episodes in there. But I was so laser-like focused, and if I just keep doing it, I'm going to eventually have a breakthrough. And I had a few more page views last month than I did the month before. And you talk yourself into a lot of stuff. It wasn't until literally I sat at a comic convention in Toronto and just nobody stopped at all.
Oh.
And I had one of those conventions that I just had nothing to do for 3 days but sit and think. And that's what I did. I really took an honest evaluation of what I had done with Greystonian and where it was working and where it was where it wasn't and where it needed to improve and what my abilities were and what I could expect for myself and where I needed to improve. And I was really deadly honest with myself about it. You know, this is working, this is not. This is funny, this is not. And when I started to really evaluate, like we've said a million times, the problem with Greystone Inn was it was a hat on a hat on a hat.
Yeah.
Right. It was too clever by half. And when I really identified that, it made it so easy to say, I've got this little sub storyline about a corporation full of supervillains. And people really responded to that. And to say to myself, that's a really simple, that's easy to explain. It's easy to, it's simple, clean, and boom, you can explain it in a sentence.
Yeah.
And in doing that, I realized I could work that theme any number of ways, combining supervillains and business to create any number of storylines. And when I started realizing that and realizing where my strengths lied as an artist and where my strengths were as a writer,
right,
when I was really, really honest with myself, I could apply all of those mistakes, which were hard won and valuable because I could learn from them. I could apply all those mistakes and focus on doing the next thing better. And Evil Inc. was way better than Greystone Inn in the first year.
Yeah.
You look back at that first year of Evil Inc. and it's not great. It was better than Greystone, but it wasn't great.
Still finding its footing. Yeah.
I got into that habit though of really scrutinizing myself and especially going over like the month previous, like stuff that I would forget about what the punchlines were. So I could really evaluate whether they were funny for the first time ever. And a lot of them weren't. But really getting to the habit of self-scrutiny helped me get to a point where now I'm really super proud of the Evil Inc. that's going out to people right now because I learned from all those mistakes. But listen, I've been running my mouth a lot. Give Rob some thoughts here. He's stopping after 10 years. Give this guy some thoughts.
Well, I will say this in friendship. One of the reasons why I did not interrupt you is because you were spinning advice gold right there, and I did not want to interrupt you because if you are thinking about ending a project, if you're not sure about where you stand right now, if you have ended a project and you're like, well, what a waste of time that was, go back and re-listen to what the last 5 minutes of what Brad just said, because there's a lot of great life lessons there, the biggest of which is that there's no wasted time if you learn a lesson from it.
Right.
And one of the best lessons you can learn from anything like this, a moment like this in your creative career, is better self-evaluation. You know, what did I learn? What did I do wrong? What missteps did I take that I can take differently? What is a more efficient way to a creative path that finds me success, right? And so I think Brad's advice was invaluable right there. And honestly, I intentionally didn't interrupt you because you were spinning out gold there. So as far as projects that I've ended, I don't have a similar moment like Brad does of ending a Greystone Inn and then going into an Evil Inc. But I will tell you this. If Dave Kellett now was starting Sheldon, I am much better at self-evaluating to tell you that I, too, created a comic strip with a hat on top of a hat on top of a hat on top of a hat. Mm-hmm. So let's just break down how many things Sheldon asks you as a new reader on an installment basis to remember.
Yeah.
Okay. One, Sheldon's parents are dead. He's being raised by his grandfather. Okay, not necessarily weird. That happens, but it's just something you're going to have to remember. Mm-hmm. Number two, Sheldon is also a software billionaire. He's created this company that rivals Bezos and Gates and all this stuff, right? I don't talk about it in the comic strip much anymore for reasons, but anyway, that's another thing. Sheldon downloaded speech recognition and software into his duck's head. His duck, Arthur, can now talk, right? Okay, great. There's also another myriad menagerie of animals in the strip, none of whom talk. So the duck does talk, the rest don't.
Right.
What I'm getting at here is you can tell that there's a lot of asks of the audience that a younger Dave Kellett as a cartoonist was expecting my audience to go along with. And that's fine. That's all well and good. Any one, any two, any three, You start putting too many of these two onto a comic strip, and it overloads the concept. They're like, wait, what is this strip about? It's about this. It's about that. What is it about a grandfather-grandson relationship? Is it about a boy and his duck? Is it about a boy and his duck and his 19 other animals that don't talk, but all seemingly have a high level of consciousness? Is it about a boy being a software billionaire? So what I'm getting at is an older Dave Kellett, if I were relaunching Sheldon now, and I'm not going to do it, but if I were relaunching Sheldon now, I would pick a much cleaner storyline, a much cleaner pitch, both because it makes it easier to write to and easier to market to, easier to sell to, easier to craft advertising for the internet on. You know what I mean? Easier for the word to spread, basically. Starting with a focus and a cleaner focus is one of the greatest things you can get from any project that ends for the next project. And so that's why I think Brad's advice is so great. So I don't know if I muddied the waters there with my explanation there, Brad, but what I was trying to say is that in the march of years where you end projects and you feel like they're a failure, one of the greatest things you can get, I was just trying to echo, one of the greatest things you can get is that better sense of self-evaluation and that better sense of what did you do wrong? What would you do differently now if you were to start again? And to start the next project with that knowledge and that and being, you know, forearmed is forewarned or forewarned is forearmed kind of thing about what you did wrong last time. So,
And I agree. I mean, just a great example is like when I started Evil Inc., A lot of the art was kind of like Little Orphan Annie art, right? I just drew the pupils. When I went back and looked at that, I realized that so much of my writing relied on expression to sell the joke. And those eyes are great in terms of being minimalist, but they're not great for expression. They're not super good. You need eyelids and eyelashes and eyebrows and all kinds of stuff. It's particularly if you're gonna rely on something that really relies on that expression to sell it, especially if your word usage isn't quite sharp enough to do all the heavy lifting, then the expression has to do some of it.
Yeah.
And that's why you saw one of the many reasons you saw a lot of my art change over those first several years of Evil Inc. is because I went back and I realized that so much of my the writing was not landing because it wasn't being emoted by the characters. So there's all kinds of things that you can learn looking at your stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say this, though. I just realized that even though Sheldon didn't end per se, starting Drive, in terms of Rob's question of what did you learn that you could apply going forward, all of the little hiccups that I had with Sheldon, either in establishing storylines that didn't go anywhere or establishing too many storylines or having too many asks of the audience, what I learned with Drive is, at least at the first, keep it clean. And so I did learn with my next project what to do different. Anyway, Rob, I wish you the best and Brad wishes you the best. It's never easy in the moment that you're in to have stopped a project, but have not yet started the next one because it feels like, if everything feels like a waste and we know what that's like in general, right? So we wish you best. Keep at it. I think Brad probably has better advice than I do for this, but keep at it and prepare yourself for when the next lightning bolt strikes and you're ready for the next project.
I'm just going to put a cap on that by saying you probably feel like a failure for ending after 10 years. And I will tell you without a hesitation that failure would have been going on to the 11th.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Especially if it wasn't working for you, if you saw that this thing was not working, you made the right decision to try something new. Failure was not ending after 10. Failure would have been getting to that realization and pushing on to 11, right? And let's also remember, Rob, you're gonna be creative for the rest of your life. The next creative thing you do maybe takes off. There's any number of things you can do, right? And maybe it's a comic, maybe it's something different. But let's say you do that for 2 or 3 years, and then you get to a point where that's just not working for you. Guess what? There's nothing that says you can't go to your original comic that you ended and go back to that and pick that up and do that and maybe reimagine it or do a reversion of it. There's a reboot. There's all kinds of things you can do. There is no such thing as a failure if you take the time to learn from those places that you've been.
Well, I'll put a capstone on top of Brad's capstone, which is that I would advise as a friend, I would advise not looking back. I think when a project has reached its run, it mm-hmm. is time to put it away and say, on to new things, on to brighter horizons. And I say that because Brad and I have acquaintances and friends that have kept going back to the same project again yeah. and again yeah. and again. And it's like, you have better ideas. I know you have. This is not your one well that you have to go to. You know, there are different sources of creativity in your heart. Yeah. There are different ideas sparking in your heart. I know this is the case. Stop going back to that well. Mm-hmm. Because part of self-evaluation is realizing that there's a reason why it didn't work the first time, right? Yeah. And so go on to new pastures, greener pastures, try something else, I think, is a bit of advice that I would give. So
Dave's got the better advice. Dave, I'm gonna acquiesce to you. You've definitely got the better line on this.
Well also, listen, Dave, I don't know if you guys remember, acquiesce was the $5 word for the show. So Brad, hooray, you got the show.
Oh, no. You got your change jar again. I missed the change jar. Well, listen, I know we're running out of time, but I've got one that I just want to handle really quickly because it is one that I wonder whether a lot of people deal with this, and it's a super simple answer, okay?
Okay.
So the question is, I sell monthly collections for 99 cents on my website using PayPal. Turns out now they collect 33 cents as a fee. Should I get my prices up? If so, how much? Well, first of all, that's not a new thing. This person said, well, now they take 33 cents out. That's always been. I know this because I wrote about this for Webcomics Weekly back in 2013. It's also, by the way, somewhere in the 200s page 259 of the Webcomics Handbook. So,
God, you just Rain Man'd that. That was amazing. Yeah. How did you know that was the page?
It's called show prep, Dave.
Be familiar, Brad. I wouldn't be familiar.
But so here's the deal. You can set your PayPal up to accept micropayments, okay? And then they take a different cut because they know you're doing micropayments. So with PayPal micropayments, you'll pay 5% plus 5 cents per transaction. On a regular PayPal setup, you've got 2.9% per transaction plus 30 cents flat deducted per transaction. That's how they get to that 33 cents on a 99 cent deal. So you can actually bump your profits way up if you switch to PayPal micropayments because at 99 cents, you get 67 cents after the standard PayPal fees. Using micropayments, you get 89 cents after the micropayment fees. So you can set up, as far as I know, unless they've changed it. And I gave it a quick little buzz around the internet, and it does not look like that has changed. Check out PayPal micropayments if you're going to be offering 99 cents. Depending on what you're doing, you know, the whole thing from a few years ago is Patreon was saying, listen, a dollar isn't much anymore. They were saying everybody should start their lowest tier on $2. Mm-hmm. And that made a huge difference in a lot of people's campaigns. I would be very, very encouraging of you to experiment with that same thing. Yep. Maybe instead of 99 cents, make it $1.99 and see what happens. And also, I think that would fall under micropayments as well. So those are two ideas I've got for you. What do you think, Dave?
No, I don't have much to add other than to say, if you do the math, I think you will find that even selling far less at $1.99, you will still end up in a net positive.
Yep.
And which is the reason why Patreon suggested that as well. So I don't have much to add other than I think value your work a little bit more than the 99 cent route. And I think you will find happiness from that.
I agree 100%. And that means that you have been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your host have been my friend Brad Geiger, the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com and the editor of webcomics.com. Boy, did I chew that apart.
And my good friend, the wonderful and always caring.
All right,
caring.
Slow it down over there. I don't know what you're about to say.
The wonderful Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions. over at www.woodsong.media. And this week's show was sponsored by the good folks at Wacom over at WACOM.com. Wacom, the makers of the new Wacom One.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one. This one comes in from Bryce Art, who says, "Thanks, guys. Listen to this, Dave. I'm 54 years old and just published my first long-form webcomic on Webtoons.
Hey!
Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful.
I doubt that I would have gotten this far without your weekly injection of knowledge, humor, and inspiration."
Hey, that's
Isn't
really
that
nice.
Awesome?
Yeah. That's great. And congratulations on that. Boy, that is fantastic.
No kidding.
That's a big thing. I can't imagine being able to say, like, yeah, I put out my first guitar album at 54. Like, imagine.
Right.
What I'm saying, Brad, is like starting something totally new and being able to say, yep, at 54, I'm staking out new ground. So congratulations on that. That is fantastic news. And I will say Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that like Winston Churchill.
And we will fight them on the beaches. And we will fight them on the shores. patreon.com/comiclab.
Yeah, I guess that would be my advice, is to know when to end a project.
And on that note, this is our final episode of patreon.com/comiclab. Tune in next week when my new co-host David Malky and Chris Straub join me here on patreon.com/comiclab. Let's give a big Comic Lab shout out to Brad Geiger. Thank you, Brad, for giving it your old college try for almost 3 years on Comic Lab. We thank Brad, and tune in next week for Chris and Dave and Dave. Going to be a great week.
Well, I'll try to listen.
So sad. Just the slow wiping of the eyebrows. I'll try to listen.